Hey everybody, Sarah Grillo here, back again for another podcast. And today I've got a star-studded cast of Marina Sturco of Cerulli Associates and Katie Carey of Buckingham Strategic Wealth and my baby. Hey everybody. I know, I just had a baby a month ago, and so you know the baby is always home with me, so she's on my podcast too. But thank you everybody, Marina and Katie, welcome. So today's topic is getting more women up to the top of the industry, which is a very exciting topic. I know some women are there already, but I want more. There's a huge opportunity with more women demanding female financial advice from female financial advisors. So the time to act is now. But I got to tell you, I was reading this article from Data USA, and I was shocked, and to be honest with you, a little bit incensed to find out that according to Data USA, and I'm going to link the article below, the average male salary in financial advising is 153 grand, whereas the average female salary is 94,000 bangers. And I got to say, I mean, you know, why are they not equal? Or why are they even not? I mean, maybe it could be disproportionate, but why is there such a big gap there? It may be true, it may not be true, I don't know. I didn't write this article. Marina and Katie, what do you think of this?
You're not setting women up for success. Currently, many of the compensation models place an emphasis on business development, and that's misaligned with the purpose-driven perspective that women are more likely to have. And that forces them to take a financial risk that they may not feel comfortable taking. And we also know that women are more likely to take on caretaking responsibilities.
Do you think so? I don't know anything about that. I do not know anything about that, having four kids.
Exactly, exactly. And that makes that ramp up really challenging. This is a rewarding business once an advisor is established, but until the practice is up and running, it's hard, especially once, you know, for women who have babies or aging parents that need their help. And unless they have support and resources from their firm, it's difficult to grow their business in that type of compensation model.
Right. When I originally saw the numbers, my first thought was that I was surprised, but we shouldn't be too surprised because we know across all industries that this is a common theme. And I know that the industry is still much more male dominated, but to see the pay gap also in our industry is a little disappointing. But as far as the data that they use and the salary figures behind it, it's interesting to me that it seems to be even greater than the gap that you see in other industries. So while surprised by the size of the gap, not surprised that there was one altogether.
Well, yeah, I mean, surprise is a nice word for it, Katie. It kind of made my blood boil a little bit, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
So let's go back to this idea of the purpose-driven pursuit that financial advising can be and how that naturally aligns with how many women go about their practices. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? Because that's interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. So we see in our data, so Cerulli surveys financial advisors, and particularly among rookie advisors. So advisors who are new to the industry, 1 to 3 years, women are more likely to tell us that they became a financial advisor because they want to help others achieve their financial goals. Again, that part's probably not surprising, but also what's interesting is that later on as they build their practices, they're more likely to carry that through, right? So they end up kind of fulfilling that initial intent by building practices that have this holistic perspective. So that's why this kind of transaction-based or commission-based philosophy doesn't always align itself well with a holistic perspective that women are seeking.
Yeah, geez, do you think so? I mean, it's just, it's unbelievable. I have female financial advisor clients and male financial advisor clients, right? And I have seen the women, I mean, this is a generalization, and of course, my little microcosm can in no way represent what is happening in the industry as a whole, but I have seen that several of the women have really addressed the emotional aspects of money and the relationship aspect and the family dynamic aspect. And perhaps that is because they are women and they are more sensitive to maybe the more esoteric or the more emotional or the, you know, the more subjective aspects of money and finances. But I've seen some pretty awesome output coming out of them. Like, their content is awesome. It puts to shame many of the content pieces that I have seen produced by people that take a different approach. And I think that this is something that is going to be increasingly a value add in the future, where you're looking, I mean, if you're in the business just because you want to tell people the, you know, what to do with their investments, I mean, that's becoming a commoditized kind of a thing, right? So for someone to say, I can come in there and I can deal with your issues with your mother-in-law, right? Or I can deal with the fact that you and your brother can't agree about who should marry, who should manage mom's money after mom passes, right? Or whatever. I mean, I think that that would be such a value add. And I'm surprised that more people are not addressing it in their marketing and their sales.
You know, we found on our team, some even where they have men financial advisors and female financial advisors, that we also hear different things from our clients, that we pick up on different things in conversation. We build a team where we have both in some cases, because different clients need different things from their advisor. And I do find that in a lot of cases that female advisors tend to be very empathetic and do a very good job of listening to their clients' needs and making sure that we're providing value to them beyond just investment management, but really going to the whole holistic approach and providing value in other areas that may be outside of the realm of traditional wealth management.
Mm-hmm. Right. The compensation model, I mean, I think the compensation model is a huge block though. I just think until that changes, it's going to be really hard to get really good women into the business. Not that there aren't really good women already, but so many women are blocked from it. Like, one of the reasons I got out of the business and now, you know, I think, you know, in terms of what I'm doing with my career right now, probably this is better for me anyways, because I was always a talented writer, but then never really had the, I never attempted to be a career writer, because everyone has said, oh, freelance writers are poor and this and that, which turned out to not be the case in my case, because I've been very successful at it, right? But it seems to have actually been my calling in life, but I had to step away from my role as a financial advisor to find it. But one of the things that really prompted me to do that, by the way, was the fact that I had one baby that was a year old. I had just had another one. And here's the thing too. I had just had my baby and I had to work during maternity leave. Okay. So I basically took 2 weeks off and then I was like, well, wait a minute. I need to get paid here. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, I have two children now that I've brought into the world and I need to sit here and be broke. And I remember there was one day, I swear, I almost had a nervous breakdown. I mean, there's no other way to say it, that the stress that is on you when you have children that need you, and raising a child is all consuming, especially when they are that young. And there's no maternity leave compensation. There's nothing to support you. There's no safety net. You know, it really made me kind of rethink. And then I went back. What happened was I went back to the business and I tried to do it. And I just was, it was like there was no wind in my sail. I couldn't pack the punch anymore. Like, you know, with the way that I am with my calling and with my sales is like, I'm going for the gusto, you know, like I'm not taking no for an answer. Once I get into something, like you see me on LinkedIn, you see all that I do, I'm very active. But it was like, I couldn't fight back. When people said they weren't interested, I couldn't go find another prospect. I couldn't fight them on, I couldn't come back and try again with them or say, or think about why they were saying that. It just became like, okay, is this person going to buy this insurance contract for me? Is this person going to sign up, fill the paperwork out or not? And then when they didn't, you know, when it didn't happen as quickly as I needed it to, because I was on maternity leave, I needed to get paid. I was like, this stinks, you know? Or even the reason there was one particular role I was in whether I told the person in advance, I said, look, I'm pregnant, I'm going to have a baby. And they said, this was like, this made me so mad early in the relationship. And I should have just walked in the other direction, but I didn't. Was that they said in the beginning, oh, you know, don't worry. It's not going to be a low salary. You'll be able to support yourself because we customize the salary based on your life needs. Well, it turns out that was, I never made more than $2,000 a month in salary from them, which I guess that's pretty standard in the industry. Can't complain about that. But the gripe that I do have is that's not what I was told when I was upfront with them and told them I'm expecting a baby. That was the biggest slap in the face. And it really made me not trust them from the beginning.
Yeah, that is a, your story is one that I hope is something that is on the way out or changing in a way in the industry as a whole. I know that my experience has been a little bit different, but I, with working at an RIA firm, all of the advisors in our firm are salaried. And because it's larger in size, they're able to offer benefits that are more conducive and supportive to people who are looking for a little bit more work-life balance and also who expect in the future or may need maternity or paternity leave benefits. I myself actually am expecting my first child here in August, and I know that there are firms out there, but they're probably a bit few and far between that when I go on maternity leave when my son is born in August, that I have a team here supporting me and that my benefits cover my work as an advisor while I'm gone. So hopefully that's something that becomes more the norm in the future. And that would be, it makes a big difference to attracting women in your firm and high quality women who, these are very real concerns that a lot of female advisors have.
Yeah.
Particularly younger ones.
Awesome for you, by the way. Congratulations. I have a boy.
Thank you.
I have a little boy. Yeah. Wait until he gets to be three, though, by the way. But anyway, so, I mean, it's like, I think that's great, Katie, that you're able to have that at your firm. But what if you work in insurance?
Right.
What if you work in a commission-driven? Like, I remember that they were like, there was one month, the first month after I had my baby, I made my quote-unquote quota for the month. And then the next month, I remember sitting there like, okay, I used up all my chips here. Like, now I'm starting from zero. How am I going to make this month's commission? It was right. The worst feeling in the world. And then it was like, I wanted to sleep. The baby's up at night. You know, it's like, like I said, the stress was like, I was going to have a nervous breakdown. I mean, there's no other way to say it. And then, I mean, what even if people are going through having an aging relative, you know, or something.
Right.
Or any other thing that could happen when you have family responsibilities. So, I mean, I think I would love to see more compensation models changing, Katie, because I feel like that would benefit the industry in general.
Yeah, that seems to be one of the biggest issues, that women who are in the workforce aren't supported in a way to being able to do both things and support family members and to raise children and also have the flexibility they need to continue to work. I think a study I had read that women spend an average of about 12 years out of the paid workforce for caring for others, whether it be their children or their relatives. And I was really surprised that 12 years is the average for most women compared to men.
Right. I mean, that's a huge amount of time. Huge amount of time. So Marina, what is your data? What is Cerulli saying about this? About are things changing? What data or insights can you offer to us about what's going on out there?
Well, in a lot of ways, things haven't changed. It's been really difficult for firms to move the needle. The industry continues to grapple with an exceedingly low women advisor headcount right now. Even though women are 51% of the population in the US, but only 14% of financial advisors. So I know that sounds discouraging, but it's, you know, I like to say that it's a marathon, not a sprint. The silver lining, and Katie mentioned this, is advisor teaming. So we have seen, you know, in the numbers that advisor teaming is on the rise. know, more than half of advisors do operate in a team structure, and that does help women, especially as they're starting out.
Yeah.
Well, and it's so interesting when I hear the figures of advisor groups in general that, so you said 51% of the population is female and only 14% are financial advisors. I know the CFP board says that of CFP certificates, about 23% are women. And then I take a look around the firm that I work at Buckingham, where they have this compensation model that's slightly different than the industry as a whole with being salary-based. And I think our female advisor present is closer to 45% across the board. So it really speaks volumes to the ability to attract and also retain female advisors with a different compensation model. So I find those figures really interesting.
Yeah, I would love to see a team-based approach because, and I had another podcast with Hugh Massey of DNA Behavior, and we were talking about this. I mean, sometimes you get into the relationship and you find out you're not as compatible with the person anyways. Like, you misunderstood their whole approach, or the way that you communicate is so different, or they're a night person and you're a morning person, or whatever. And so I would love to see the industry move towards a more team-based approach, but it can be hard because it's typically been an eat what you kill. And I think even in the RIA space, it's typically thought of as an eat what you kill kind of a sales profession. So I think, you know, we can say, oh, we should serve clients in teams. But then the question is, how does the whole thing change, right? That would be I think that would be changing the nature of the whole way that things are structured in finance. Like maybe moving to this subscription model rather than commission model or fee-based model, I think would make that easier. Like you pay the subscription fee to the firm, and then maybe whoever works on the account for a certain amount of time gets that subscription fee at any point, instead of going through whoever is the licensed representative that sold you the mutual fund. Maybe that's it, right? Because like we can say things about the programs and the salaries and the this and the that, until that changes. I mean, I don't know what this is in medicine. I don't have the statistics for it, but I don't know that there's the same kind of a thing there. You know, doctors highly compensated, client-facing role. If a doctor goes on maternity leave, how does that work, right?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, all firms need to bring in new clients. So I think if we are to radically rethink how advisors are compensated, that does need to be factored in. But with a team-based approach, it does make it easier for at least new advisors to have more robust training programs, to have longer time frames around, you know, building specialization. So at least it makes it easier in that respect.
Right. Certainly. And kind of across all industries, I think the general rule of thumb is about 21% less is what you could expect. You shouldn't expect, but is what in some industries women earn less than women. But the data that came out of Data USA for female financial advisors is far greater than that 21%.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is that maybe it is a function of, maybe all of this has to do with the attitude of women towards entrepreneurship or attitudes that women are not encouraged to have towards money or sales. Because, and you know, maybe this is something I'm making up, but I think that sometimes if a woman is aggressive as a businesswoman or is very careful about making sure that she gets paid or that she gets a certain amount of sales, she may be viewed as like too mongering or too aggressive. And then that's not attractive. You know, typically society teaches us that's not attractive in a woman. Like, you know, you're not supposed to talk about money. The guys are the ones that deal with the money, right? Whereas the man's going in there, he's going in for the kill. I think it's you know, it's more expected when a man comes in with a pitch or comes in with a sales agenda. Whereas with a woman, it's like, you know, I think it's easier for people to kind of push back on that, unfortunately. I think it's a stereotype and a prejudice that society has against women as salespeople. Have you seen that, or am I just kind of making that up?
I haven't read any specific data or studies or research about that particular topic. One thing that comes to mind when I think about it, I mean, I guess it's kind of in line with that, but that just women in general tend to be less confident about personal finance and investing. So maybe that there is a sense of a broad generalization that women aren't as confident about investing. We're less likely to choose a career in finance because it's not as much of a comfort zone. That they've done studies just to show that that lack of confidence, a lot of it comes from their, both men and women aren't at younger ages receiving training or schooling on finance, but that women in particular aren't talking about it in social settings. So you have less confidence built up because it's not something that you're used to regularly talking about or discussing, even in close families. Certainly not something that we're talking about socially with our friends, whereas men are much more likely to discuss the way they're investing or their approach to things at maybe a social gathering or a friend and family barbecue, whereas women typically don't do that. So I think that there's an issue with confidence in finance and investing for women. And I think that that spoils over a bit into when it comes time to choose a career, that maybe more men gravitate towards finance for that reason.
Mm.
But the really interesting thing, though, is that when men and women are tested on their level of knowledge with personal finance, they remarkably end up testing almost identically of having the same level of knowledge, but men talk about it more and have more confidence around their knowledge.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think also women often simply don't consider becoming a financial advisor because they don't often think of the career, right? So even if they are thinking of finance or they're thinking of financial services, it's accounting or investment banking. So because we don't really talk about being a financial advisor in the media or in schools, to Katie's point, you know, it starts really early in high school and college, just spreading that awareness and access to this career path. And then when you think about it, all of a woman's interactions with the industry, recruiters, her family's advisor, even just generic marketing messages kind of reinforce those kind of misconceptions, it becomes even harder to see herself succeed in the industry.
Right. Oh yeah, like when I was in college, right? And I like, I don't really mention this a lot, but I went to Harvard, okay? And I don't think that that makes me any more intelligent or capable than anybody else, by the way, but it was just where I went. It was actually, I feel, a bad decision that I made. I don't feel Harvard was the right place for me. It actually took me a long time to kind of live that down because of all the expectations that I had on me from going to Harvard. But just so you know, Harvard, right, when I went in there, I was interested in finance. I had this internship at Fidelity Investments, and it was like that I got myself. And it was like, if you weren't an economics major, there was no way you could get into finance other than, like, there was this room. It was called the Office of Career Services, OCS, right? And there were folders and binders full of, like, outdated magazines and directories and things like that and books that had, like, you know, it was like, okay, well, you want to, you know, work in advertising. If you didn't want to work in finance and go through the recruiting arm of Harvard, it was like that was what you needed to do. And it was awful. And I just kind of wish that earlier in my life, not that I would have ended up anywhere different than I am now, because I feel like I'm in the right place. But there really is not, I mean, what kind of a message are we sending to women about financial careers, right? There was no information about being a financial advisor. I remember I had one interview at American Express, and I went in there, and the woman, she was a woman who was interviewing me, and she was like, it was kind of discouraging, and she kind of put me off from the whole thing, because like, she's like, well, you know, you're going to need to like get all your family and friends to be on this platform. This is a sales job. Do you know what that is? You're going to have no salary. But you see what I'm saying? So it was like the same thing. Mm-hmm. Very kind of negative messaging about the career. And it's a shame, because I was so capable at that point. I had no kids. It would have been a good thing for me to do at that point. But like I said, I don't care because of what I'm doing now. And for all the women out there, you know, that are interested in the profession, this, how is it being marketed to them? It's not marketed as a career that's typically good for women. There's not that angle there.
Exactly. Yeah. I think it's all about how we position the career, because it can be extremely rewarding and extremely fulfilling for anybody, but for a woman as well. I think one of the most powerful tools we have to recruit more women into the industry are our existing established women advisors, right? Because not only are they proof that women can find a meaningful career as a financial advisor, but also their passion can translate into a genuine endorsement. So, you know, they can address some of those misconceptions. They can show kind of what challenges they've had and how they've overcome them.
Right. Social media, right? Social media would be great for that. Like, I'd love to see, you know, more women come out and encourage other women on social media.
Social media, and then even just being involved in the community and being more visible in your own area. I know personally, I went to the University of Missouri, Columbia, Mizzou, and we had a personal financial planning degree program. And a couple of times since then have stayed in touch with people in the department. I've come back and spoke at different points for their class, just to make sure that not only am I giving back to my school, but also that they're seeing a different face than maybe they're seeing from other speakers they're getting from the industry. And other opportunities like speaking at the local library events and just being out in the community and showing a different face to a financial advisor than one that you typically see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So it looks like we're going to wrap here, but I always like to end with a summary. So what would you say, Katie, is the one thing that you want the advisors listening to this to take away from this call? And then I'll get to you, Marina, but Katie first, because she comes first in alphabetical order by first name.
I think the one thing I would really hope that people will take away from the call is that being a female and being a financial advisor can go hand in hand and can be very, very rewarding career. Finding your passion and working with clients has been the best decision for me. I think what has made it so meaningful and such an important part of my life is also finding a firm that I could do that and accomplish other things where I felt like I was supported and had balance in my life and wasn't giving up one thing for the other. So I think while there's a lot of changes that need to happen in the industry, really doing our homework on the front end and making sure that we end up in firms that really support female financial advisors and support work-life balance can go a long way to making sure that you have a successful and rewarding career within finance as a female.
Oh, yeah, I like that. Hear, hear. Support that idea. Okay. Yeah. I mean, seriously, because I mean, I'm telling you right there, that was what it was for me. That was it.
You just got to find the right spot.
Right. And so I was not intelligent about that. You know, I'll take the blame for it. But yeah, I wish there were more opportunities where people could get in without feeling like, I'm dying. Where's my money? You know, how am I going to like support my kids this month? Okay. And Marina.
Yes. So I think it all goes back to you can't be what you can't see, right? That famous quote. So we need more visible icons in the industry. That's helping women understand what it means to be a financial advisor. So if you have the opportunity to go out there and share your story or help other women share their story, please do so. I think that's a big part of kind of smashing the misconceptions around being a financial advisor or other misconceptions about the industry. So yeah, you can't be what you can't see. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I love that. And that actually inspires me to say the third point, because I always do three to wrap the call, is that, you know, hey, men, like, you don't have to be a woman to support women in financial advising. So, I mean, I've had so many comments from men that read my articles whenever I write about this. And they say, because I wrote about like fashion advice once for women. And one man, he mailed in and he's like, you know, I have a daughter, she's going up for an interview. I'd love, you know, for you to pass on these comments and things like that. So, you know, men, even though you're not a woman, it doesn't have to be a roadblock. You can still put other women up there for different roles or promotions or awards. You can still talk about great female advisors. You can still inspire younger women by giving them information about the profession. Like, you don't have to be a woman necessarily to do this for other women.
Right.
Yeah. Thanks for agreeing. Okay, everybody. Well, thanks, Katie. And thank you, Marina. This was awesome. Thank you, baby, for not crying too much. And see, it goes along with the whole theme here. And I'm going to have information and just the different resources, Marina and Katie, if you want to provide them to the readers, I'll include them in the show notes. Listeners, thank you so much for listening, and please subscribe, rate, and review my show, and we will see you next time. Bye, everybody.